We continue the shiur in Sichos Horan, Seif Reish Nun Ches, paragraph 258. Rabbeinu Zalt spoke very much at length, very strongly, to his Talmidim about performing mitzvahs, doing a lot of mitzvahs, accumulating a lot of credits in the performance of mitzvahs. What is special about that? Everybody says you should do mitzvahs. What then? Not to do them. What was the point that Rabbeinu Zalt stressed so specially there? The answer is Rabbeinu Zalt taught his Talmidim to live in a very special manner of Purusha. In other words, don't mingle with the world much. It's close Talmidim. The world requires having grocers and druggists and tailors, and shoemakers, tradesmen, professionals. But let the world do that. Let them provide that. His own Talmidim, Rabbeinu Zalt, said the world needs a few people who set aside their lives purely for the sake of Avodas Hashem, to serve Hashem. Let these few people be the ones close to Rabbeinu Zalt. Don't waste your short life, the few years you have in this world, on Gashmias. Let others do that. There's a lot of people to take care of that. And you see that you spend your time, your days and nights, purely on Avodas Hashem. What does that mean? It means that all day you sit and learn. Comes to davening, spend time on davening. Don't rush through the davening. Spend a few hours, shachris, prepare yourself for it. Minchosh, take an hour or more, maidiv, and so forth. Learning at night, give time for espedidus, and then for chatzais. And learn during the night, and again have a spedidus, and then daven vasikin. It means your whole day and night, just a few hours off of sleeping, or the physical requirements of a person, should be completely devoted to Torah and Tefillah. With that in mind, this meant then that a Jew, a good Talmud would say, fine, I devote myself entirely to Avodas Hashem, I don't want to know of the world anymore, and now from here on in, I can closet myself to my private room and just daven and learn and daven and learn. Rabbeinu Zalt warned very strongly, you want to daven and learn? Very good, that's what I'm telling you to do. But that should not preclude the performance of mitzvahs. Know that you have a chiyuv to do mitzvahs. Mitzvahs ma'asiyus, an action. An action means go out and help a Jew. Go out and do gemilas chasodim. Go out and visit the sick. Go out and help those in need. Raise money for tzedakah. Raise money for mikveh. Monies that are necessary for mitzvahs, see that you acquire that, that you work for it, you give a lot of tzedakah, that you do mitzvahs between one Jew and another. Don't say that you're away from the world, cut off from humanity. The contrary, mingle with other Jews and see to it that you take part, you participate in every single mitzvah action as any other one does. So, devote yourself to Torah and Tefillah, yes, but also see to it, concentrate on performing a lot of mitzvahs. Benedict said that thirst itself is a big taiva. Thirst is a craving. A person is thirsty, craves water. And the main pleasure, main fulfillment of a taiva is dependent upon the extent of the taiva itself, the extent of the craving. How happy is a person with water, depending upon how thirsty he was. A person who has plenty to drink, gets a glass of water, doesn't really enjoy it. But a person who's in the desert, he's there for a few days without a drop of water, when he sees water, his craving, his desire, his taiva built up so that thirst is so strong that to him the fulfillment of the realization of this type of being satisfied, satiated now, is so big a pleasure that it's far greater than any other type that he could think of. So the joy, the satisfaction is dependent upon the amount of thirst or craving that a person has. So too, one who thirsts for the word of Hashem, one who has this yearning to serve Hashem, a very strong yearning, that's extremely important. And that's why the Zohar Kodesh says that in Olam Haba, the main pleasure, the main part of Gan Eden is called the Alman de Kisufa. Very strange kind of a word. There are worlds in heaven, heavenly worlds, called the worlds of yearning. 400 worlds of yearning. What is meant by worlds of yearning? Desire, craving, what kind of Gan Eden is that? The answer is that the worlds of yearning, where the yearning is fulfilled, but the yearning is much stronger. The greater the yearning, the greater the thirst, the greater the pleasure afterwards. So therefore, as much as a person has on this world a yearning desire for serving Hashem, this desire will bring him to the Eved Hashem Me'avo. He'll serve Hashem with a much greater Avo if he has this desire for it. And this, in turn, will result in a greater pleasure in Olam Haba, greater reward there, by these special worlds of yearning. Then I'll say that the greatness, the importance of desire, yearning, craving for serving Hashem, anything which is holy, is so important because even though a person is not zeche to fulfill, to carry out the mitzvah, as long as he had the desire to do it, and that desire was 100% strong, with all his power, he desired to fulfill the mitzvah, that's all that counts. That's the main thing that counts, the fact that he had the desire to do it. So important is the desire that it's the whole mitzvah, in fact. Even without performing the mitzvah afterwards, he still gets credit for the entire mitzvah. The Gemara says, one who wants to do a mitzvah, he tried his best, and he couldn't fulfill it because of the fact that there was an accident. He gets credit as though he actually did the mitzvah. Then it says we have proof from a din in Shulchan Aruch. A din says that if a person is in a place where it's not clean, a place that's physically unclean, there's a lot of waste matter around, a place like that, of course, you're not allowed to daven. You're allowed to mention words of holiness. So when the time came to say Kriya Shema, he's in a place, he's locked in a place, let's say Chas Shalom, a person in a prison. Those dungeons where they don't clean out the dungeons, there's waste matter, and there you cannot daven, it's forbidden to daven where there is that dirt. So what does a person do there? It then says, if he's got to say Kriya Shema, and there's no way out, what should he do? So it then says, he should think in his mind. Have Kavanah in his mind. Think of this in his mind. So the question is, think what? Is he allowed to think the words of Kriya Shema in his mind? That too is forbidden. Can't even think. For example, there's a very clear halacha. A person going into the bathroom is forbidden to think of words of Torah. Not to say it, but to think it. So how could it then say here, if a person's in a place that has filth, and the time came for Kriya Shema, Yahadhe Baliba, you should think in his mind, think in his heart. What? How is that possible if it's forbidden to think also? The answer is, Rabbi Avinu says that what's meant by thinking in his heart, in his mind, what should he think? He should think in his heart how badly he feels, that he wants with all his heart to say Kriya Shema, and he can't do it. That should be his thought. Yahadhe, you should think very deeply the yearning he has to fulfill the mitzvah, he cannot do it. And with that, it says if the time came to say Kriya Shema, and he's in a place he couldn't, what should he do? Think this in his mind, and what? That means that he's yotze with it. So he actually is covered with the mitzvah. So we see that a person who thinks this point in his mind, he has a desire to do the mitzvah, that's as far as he can go, he gets full credit for it. So we see the power of yearning, power of thinking, of concentrating, wanting, desiring to do a mitzvah, he gets the sechar, full reward, as though he actually did it. Of course, it can also mean that by wanting it this strongly, his reward will be, Ben Ezra says too, that a person should never be satisfied with the ke'ilu. The Gemara says that if a person wants to do a mitzvah, and through an accident he couldn't perform the mitzvah, he gets credit as though he did the mitzvah. So be happy, you've got the credit. Menachem also says a person should never be satisfied with the ke'ilu as though he did the mitzvah. Don't be satisfied because I couldn't do it. I could credit as though I did it. Say, I don't want the credit as though. I want the actual mitzvah. Keep pressing the actual physical performance of the mitzvah. In this case, what's meant here? What's meant here is, again, a person who has this thought in mind, he feels so sadly about, concentrates, how sad he is about the fact he cannot perform the mitzvah, that's not ki'ilu as though. He'll get the schar. It says he'll get the schar. What is the schar? Schar mitzvah mitzvah, Mishnah says. His reward will be, and he'll be zechet to actually perform the mitzvah. Hashem will help him, and he'll release him from this place. We'll spare him, we'll take him out of this place where he cannot perform the mitzvah. If he won't be able to go to a place where he could do the mitzvah, he'll be able to fulfill it completely. The Rabbeinu said that the item regel, raglan, feet, regel means the feet, or the supports that support the body, or that support any kind of an edifice, building of any kind. Feet are a bechina, the category of emunah. They are the bottom. Amunah is the bottom on the ladder, bottom one of the sfidos, and therefore the feet, or legel, is a bechina of emunah. On this item, on emunah, rest, stands, supported all the rest of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Because the Gemara says that we speak about how many mitzvahs there are in the Torah, 613 mitzvahs, and one Navi Chavakul came and said, I'll take all 613 and compact them to one. And Midon Alachas. Chavakul came and he made them all into one single capsule. What is that one? Tzadik Demonosa Yichya. The whole 613 mitzvahs, the entire Torah, is based on that one single mitzvah of Emunah. Everything is included on that one mitzvah alone. So therefore, what is that? That's the like the yisod, the foundation upon which rests the entire building. The entire building of the Torah, all the mitzvahs of the Torah, rest on that one foundation, the foot, the bottom, which is emunah. Now, a person needs emunah, though, which is very clear. Not a kind of emunah that's mixed up, that contains chas v'shalom doubts. Where there are doubts, that means the emunah is not perfect. It means that the emunah is tainted. It's not pure. And if the emunah is not pure, chas v'shalom means that there is a pegam in the emunah, and to a degree, there is a drop, a tiny drop of kafira, of atheism, chas v'shalom, or avodah zarah. The emunah is not perfect. It means that there is a drop of avodah zarah there. So a person must see that the emunah must be perfectly clear and pure. And when the emunah is that clear and pure, then he creates a means, a tool, with which he can receive all the shefa and brachos and blessings from heaven. Because it's the malchus, the bottom sfida, from which comes forth all the shefa in the world, and when the malchus is perfect, in perfect health, it's solid, which means the emunah is clear, without any shadow of doubt, any traces of pegam, then all the shefa comes through. Which means that if there is a drop of kefira, a drop of doubt, a drop of imperfection, then what happens to the sinai? The shefa that does come down is taken away by the klipos, by the tumah. So there is shefa, but it's taken, stolen by the powers of tumah. The person loses out on it. Therefore, when a drop of doubt enters a person's mind or heart, slightest doubt when it comes to certain matters of emunah, doesn't mean necessarily about worshipping idols. It means the slightest chas v'shalom, any doubt at all. We speak about the fact that the Torah is the word of Hashem, and that there is hashgacha prati, and you have people who deny this. We speak about the tiniest item is directed by Hashem, and only Hashem. And any kind of cures and any kind of actions and any kind of wars, any kind of decisions are all made by Hashem himself. A person has the slightest doubt, Chas v'shalom, he allows that doubt to infiltrate into his mind or heart. What happens is that the emunah becomes puggled. There's a deficiency in the emunah. Therefore, once it's puggled, then the shefa is gone. It goes to the klipos. What causes this pigam? What is the cause of this pigam in Amuna? What brings about this drop of tefillah? The main analysis is purely one item, and that is gesus. A person who has geva, haughtiness, considers himself as important. Once he considers himself important, that means that he exists. And if he exists, and there is lacking what? Hashem is everywhere. Hashem fills every drop of space. So as long as a person says, I don't count, that means that Hashem is here, where I am. I don't exist. But once he begins to count, he has this gaiva and guesses, that means he's taking up space. So Hashem says, ignores the words of Hashem, I cannot live together with this person. Because he's taking up space, he's driving me out, he's driving the Shekhinah away. So what is the cause of this evil, of kfida? It's purely because of gasus gaiva, and this brings about, as it's shown, the removal of the Shekhinah, it brings about the charein af, the sartem, when a Jew turns away from Hashem, the chora af Hashem, brings about the anger of Hashem, chas v'shalom, because this is kfida. This is avodah zarah. Abinadel says that a person should watch, look, observe, study very carefully himself, how low he is, how unimportant he is, and how great kaviyochel Hashem is. And to this, he will not get to any kind of kfida. How can a person do this? You say he must look carefully. It means he must have a good eye, a powerful eye. And how does a person get this? Through the mitzvah of Shabbos. That's why the Gemara says that Shabbos is so important. The person obeys the Shabbos, he is mam and he believes in Hashem. The person obeys every mitzvah in the Torah, but not Shabbos, he is a kefir de'ika. He is a complete atheist. Without Shabbos, a person does not believe in Hashem. Because Shabbos is that eye with which a person can study, see, and correct and perfect himself. The word Shabbos is shin bas. Shin is the three parts to the eye, the three colors of the eye. Bas is the bas ayin, the pupil of the eye. This is with what a person can see, can visualize, can study carefully spiritually. So a person who has the Shabbos can then see to perfect himself, to see that his emunah is perfect. So through Shabbos, a person, actually, Shemitah Shabbos can save a person from gaiva, save a person from gaiva and strengthen a person's emunah. And therefore, the Gemara says something very strange. The Gemara says that a person on Shemesh Shabbos, even if he is an Eved Avodah Zarah, he's the worst idol worshiper. Kedoid Enosh, Kedoid Enosh, that generation was one where all people worshipped idols. If a person is an Eved Avodah Zarah like Kedoid Enosh, but he's a Shemesh Shabbos, then he's forgiven from heaven completely. Completely forgiven and moichel from heaven because he is Shemesh Shabbos. Isn't that some kind of a contradiction? A person is Eved Avodah Zarah to the extent, the furthest extent, and he's a Shemesh Shabbos. And he's forgiven for all his sins, the Gemara says. Even for Avodah Zarah. The answer is that the Shabbos itself will drive out, that's the tshuva, it will drive out the last vestige of any trace of Avodah Zarah, any trace of kefida. To a point, will it be forgiven because there's nothing left of it? There's no trace of his Avodah Zarah anymore. That's why it's through Shabbos that a person can destroy this evil force, can be zechet to emunah. So too, through a lack of emunah, through a pigam in emunah, this brings about to dinim. Dinim means chesed is Hashem. Dinim is Elikim. Elikim is Din. This is called the Pegimas Halavona, the deficiency in the Lavona. The moon, the lack of the full moon, means that there's a Pegam, Pegimas Halavona. This is Dinim. Dinim means harshness. The moon is not complete. Again, of course, we explained many times the moon represents the Jews, represents the Shekhinah. When there is something lacking, the Shekhinah is in Golas, Jews are suffering, there is a Pegimah Salavona. When Mashiach comes, there will be no more Pegimah Salavona, it will only become complete forever. But now, this Pegimah Salavona means that there is Dinu. That's why the Lavona itself is Pegimatria, Elikim, to show that now there is dinim. That's what the pasuk says, Shemesh Umogen Hashem Elikim. Shemesh Umogen Hashem Elikim. Hashem Elikim, Hashem Chesed Elikim Din, is Shemesh Umogen. Shemesh is sun, Umogen Begimatri Olavona. We see that the Hashem stands for the sun. It's complete. The Olavona is Pogum, therefore it's called Din. That's why we say too, the Gemara says that right now, Hashem himself, the Shem Hashem, name of Hashem, is written one way, Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, and when you read it, you pronounce it differently. You pronounce it Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. But the Yosef Lova in the future, from Haba, it will be written and read the same way. It won't be pronounced differently. Now, the writing and the reading, that's the Bechina Teide Shemiksav and Teide Shemapeh. Also the Bechina of the sun and the moon, because the sun is Teide Shemiksav, the moon is Teide Shemapeh. That's Teferes and Malchus. We've gone through that many times. That's also the Bechina of Hashem Elikim. Hashem is Teferes, Elikim is Malchus. So this is what's meant by now, at this time, it's written one way, it's pronounced a different way. It's pronounced, Din, Aleph Dalet. Because now you don't have the unity, Kaviyachol, you haven't got the complete unity return of the Shechina. Yosef Lovoi, when will have then Hashem Hu Elikim, which means Hashem Echod Ushmoy Echod, will be a complete Yichud. Hashem Echod Ushmoy Echod, Hashem and Elikim will be one, united completely. There'll be no more Begimus Halavona, you'll have the sun and the moon will become equal again. We'll have Chesed and Din will become united, so it'll become one. Pure to face. Hashem, Holy Kim, and Hashem Echod Ishmael Echod. Benel says this too is Pshat in the Pasuk Vayeshev Yaakov Yeres Megulei Oviv. Yaakov is the Shemesh. Yaakov is the sun, Teferis. He lived the Yeres Megulei Oviv. Oviv is Yitzchak, who is Din. That means that there was a complete Yichud. Yaakov, the Yeres Megulei Oviv, there was Yichud of Hashem and Elikim. How do we have that Yichud of Hashem and Elikim? The unity, the merging of Hashem and Elikim, Yaakov and Yitzchak, because the next Pasuk, Eilat told us Yaakov, Yosef. Yosef HaTzadik represents the Shabbos Kodesh. Shmuel the Bechina of Shabbos Kodesh, as we said, a person's eye is perfected, or he sees his shiftless, how low he is. The greatness of Hashem, he accepts upon himself the Malchus of Hashem, then Hashem Echod Ishmael Echod. So through Yosef HaTzadik, through Bechinas Shabbos Kodesh, then you'll have Yaakov and Yitzchak become one Hashem Elikim. The point is, the Ben Azal brings out that the person should be Zecher to strengthen his Emunah completely. His Emunah must be perfected to the highest degree, where there be no trace of a begun, no trace of a doubt in his mind, Chas V'Shalom. And this person can do. Actual advice is to see to it that his Shabbos is perfect. Observe the Shabbos 100%. Don't allow yourself ever to get into any shilas on Shabbos Kodesh, on anything. Especially, because a person says he never puts on a light in Shabbos, he never carries on Shabbos, what's the problem? The answer is that the Shabbos means see that the Shabbos is kept holy in words and talk. On Shabbos, be careful of what you say. It's the main Indian of Shavuos and Shabbos, Amida. The words that are spoken on Shabbos, that's the main way of showing a true Shemitah Shabbos. The person should see that he keeps his words pure and holy, just like the clothes on Shabbos are different, the food on Shabbos is different, the davening on Shabbos is different, the words he speaks should also be different, complete and pure. When the Shabbos is pure, the Emunah is pure, there's no Abigam. That person is zecher to have a complete emunah, complete purification. In his case, he's zecher to have Hashem Elikim in his life. Ben Adal says there is a special kind of chen, special kind of charm. The person who has this, possesses this charm, possesses a very special power. gift. He's able to actually foretell the future. He can be a prognosticator. How? Because with this chen, his dreams are much more realistic. You know that dreams, there are many that are false. The vast majority of dreams are meaningless. Nothing at all. They're just visions a person sees that bear no truth whatsoever as far as the future is concerned. They're all dvarim b'telem. But the greater the person is, the bigger the tzaddik, the more his dream begins to shape up and take meaning. In fact, the real tzaddik could see in his dreams the actual future, could foretell the future. So how does a person have this power? If he has a certain kind of chen, his charm, with that, his dreams become purer, and with his dreams, he could foretell the future. Not only that, but he can even interpret other person's dreams. To see the future in other person's dreams, that which is completely hidden from others, they can't see anything in them, he could select, pick out those few grains of truth and see the future. What is this chen, special charm? This was the chen that Yosef HaTzadik possessed. We say Bein Peidos Yosef. Yosef was Bein Peidos. Peidos means beauty, chen, charm. He had this kind of charm that made him able to understand, interpret the dream of others. Not only that, but also he himself had dreams. He dreamt himself. The Torah should go tell us about people's dreams. People have dreams, stories about dreams. It would seem to us as a topic that doesn't merit mentioning, giving space to it in the Torah. Yet when it comes to the dreams of Yosef HaTzadik, or his interpretations, it is that important, that serious, that high, that the Torah takes time out for it. It spends a lot of words on it, a lot of words, more than it does on many other mitzvahs, to show how far-reaching this is, and all due to the fact that he was Bein Peidos Yosef. Peidos, of course, again, means that Tzaddik Emes who was able to unite, to tie in, to sew together. The word Peidos is in letters Tefer. Tefer means to sew. Sew together the Yichud of Yudke, Vovke, and Ekye, in all its forms. The seven names, the Gematria Peidos. He's able to sew together that because he's that Tzaddik Emes. Therefore, he has the power of Peser, interpret Chalimus. But his Peidos is also Peser Chalimus, interpret these dreams because he has this Peidos, this Chayim. Then it all spoke about young couples. Young couples who get married. When they get married, there is a very big simcha for some people. Sometimes there are some who don't enjoy it completely. There are some parents on one side that seem to oppose the shidduch. But in most cases, the simcha is a big one. Sometimes one set of parents go to a big expense. They're not that happy. Wedding is all theirs. The expenses. But all around, after all the arguments are said and done and finished, it is a simcha. It's a wedding. It's a happiness. They sort of drop everything, they forget the odds they had, the ticket or the arguments they had before the wedding, and they enjoy the wedding. They go all out, at least enjoy the meal. You spend so much money for it, enjoy it. Eat hearty, dance, be mesameach, simchas chosen kala. So a wedding is a very happy affair. And of course, we're more concerned with the chosen and kala themselves. So the chosen and kala, that's, in a sense, the most important day of their lives. For them, this is such a vital time, an event where the Gashmias, they enjoy themselves so much, they have their relatives and their friends, and they spend all night counting the gifts, and they start a new life. Same time also, of course, Beruchnias, they have a new beginning. There is a kapora. Kapora, forgiveness for all the sins they did till that day. They have a new start now, so that alone adds very much to their simcha. Simcha that they are a newly wedded couple, like a newly born organism. newly born unit has come to this world. No evil traces, all the past wrongs have been corrected, all the past sins have been erased. There is only simcha. Now, for this kind of a yichud, this combination of this chas and kala, who start life anew, start building a new world, a new home, a new world. They're going to have children, they're going to bring forth a new generation. This is the one where there is an enemy lurking, waiting in the shadows, ready to pounce. This is the Satan, the Baldovar, who concentrates very much, because to him, there is a chance, chas v'shalom, if he could succeed in bringing about a kilkul to spoil the shalom bayis, chas v'shalom, to break up the peace at home, the happiness at home, the harmony, to him is the biggest victory possible. For one thing, if he breaks the shalom bayis, the Satan, whose desire and concentration is to bring tumah into our house, to remove the kedusha. Once he succeeds in making a pidud, a separation of the hearts between the husband and wife, then, of course, he has succeeded in removing the shekhinah from that house, Rechmon Otzlan. So, a pidud lamato, separation below, a disharmony below, brings about a separation above. Repeated above, the Shekhinah is leaves the home, and there is Kaviyacho above too, repeated. In addition, though, what's much worse is that the Satan knows that if he can succeed in making this Peter between husband and wife, getting them into friction, into argument, a very serious rift, what happens? The chaos, the anger begins to take over, and then there is anger, remorse, regret, resentment, desire to hurt person, the husband or wife wants to hurt the other chashon. He himself was hurt, she was hurt. So this begins to grow. The resentment, the animosity begins to grow, the hatred, chashon, and this whole simcha and kedusha turns into tumah. A case like that, Yisata knows that now he has a very easy victory. Because when the man develops an attitude of that kind, he can very easily be swayed to commit any kind of sins. Whether it's a sin of kas or a sin of dropping his strictness in religion, chas v'shalom, he becomes so angry, he drops a certain thing. The man becomes angry, he'll pull off his yarmulke. There were cases like that where the kas in the house is that bad, he goes wild, he goes insane. He doesn't go completely insane, but he does things that were kas itself, the Gemara says, is insanity. So this kind of a kas, this kind of a pidud, this kind of animosity can so easily bring a man to the point of committing sins openly, and the Satan has a very easy victim. So Ben Azal warned, he said, remember that when a young couple get married, they should know that's a moment of simcha, a moment of happiness. Everybody is their friend. So many friends come to the wedding to participate in the simcha, to enjoy. And yet the person must know, you have a lot of friends, but you have one enemy there who comes to the wedding and waits in the wings. He waits on the side. He won't take part in the simcha. He waits, he lurks patiently. He waits until this is all over. And he begins to gnaw away at this shalom bias. He does his best. It's up to the person to see to it not to allow this to happen. It's not that simple that the shalom bias is broken. There's an argument, a rift between husband and wife. It's not just that alone. This is the work of the Satan to try to undermine the actual kedusha of the home. The home itself is a Beis HaMikdash. It's the resting place for the Shekhinah. It's a place which should be a holy place. The mitzvahs are done constantly. The eating, the drinking, the learning, the living itself is all mitzvahs. A Jewish house is a house of mitzvahs. But when you have this pidud, when you have this disharmony, chas v'shalom, this rift between husband and wife, that means there is a rift where the Shekhinah leaves, the Kedusha is gone. When that Kedusha goes, in its place, you have new tenants, inhabitants, the Malachi Chavola, Chas V'Shalom, the Klipos, the Tumos, the Shedim, they come into the house, Rachman al-Islam, they wreck the house completely, and these are the tools of the Satan, who eventually takes control over this neshama. The man becomes an easy victim to his wiles to lure him into every kind of sin. Then as are warned, be sure, be see to it, that when you get married, concentrate. Know that the inyan of shalom bayis is for your neshama as well as for your guf. As well as for the husband and wife physically, so too for the neshamas, because the neshamas together are one. The health of the neshama depends upon the shalom bayis in the house. And they've got to work to defeat this enemy, defeat the satan who wants to destroy them. Know that he's out to destroy, and the one way to defeat him is to see that the shalom bayis remains solid. If that shalom bayis is solid, he'll be driven out, he'll give up, he'll go elsewhere. It's up to you to see that that shalom bayis is solid. And this Aminadol said to the Bnei Anayudim, the young couples, because if they are zech in the beginning, if it is that you say the beginning, the zech in the beginning to see to it that they do not allow any kind of argument or rift in the first section, the first part, section of time of their marriage, then in later years it becomes much easier. Later years they can easily overcome any desire for argument, or they can pacify one another, they can make peace, they can make up more easily. It's only the beginning when it's difficult. The person succeeds in ousting the satan, the Baal Dabba, from his house in the beginning, will be zecher to have the Shekhinah there as a regular, permanent tenant. Now, Rabbi Nal says, advice to a husband. We know that he does not give advice to a wife how to go about pacifying a husband. Apparently, that's not the wife's duty. A wife is in herself subservient, and since she is subservient, she cannot be blamed, actually, for much of the disharmony in the house. Of course, you do get, once in a while, very rarely you find a wife who is a nag, a terrible nag. Actually, despite the fact that a wife does most of the talking, but in essence, when it comes to a battle at home, generally, vast majority of cases, it's up to the husband to keep the peace at home. Benazal says, this is fact, this cannot be denied. The men have to know this, they've got to live with this fact. Therefore, the Benazal quotes the Gemara. Benazal himself issued a very strong warning to his Talmidim. He said to them, through the Gemara says this, but I repeat this in the strongest of terms. Each one should see to it to respect, to honor his wife to the utmost, most of his ability. See that his wife is given the greatest covet, whether it's in buying her things, whether it's in treating her well, whether it's in speaking softly to her. All these cases, see that you show the greatest honor and respect to a wife. Aside from the fact that, of course, this means his own good, because his wealth depends upon his wife. But the fact, Ben El says, that be honest, do not lie. Fact is, you know the truth that the wives deserve this. If for one reason alone, in this so-called partnership between husband and wife, so-called partnership, let's say that the husband should contribute more than a wife, as if he is the superior member of the two, but even at least if they are equal, he should contribute at least this equal share. We've got to recognize the fact, and admit to the fact, and give honor to the fact that the wives suffer much more than the husbands. Can you measure the extent of the pain and suffering that a woman goes through during pregnancy? How much does a man suffer during a pregnancy? Nothing. There's no partnership there. All the pain and physical suffering for so many months is suffered and endured by a woman alone. The more than that, much more, the pain of childbirth. How much stomach aches does a man have when he suddenly finds out that the father of a child became a father without a trace of stomach ache? No pain whatsoever. He became a father. Who suffered the whole thing? The wife. And it also has to go through all those 9 months of suffering, carrying a burden, and an unpleasant burden many times, and to top it off with the pain of childbirth, all this you got free. Doesn't that deserve giving honor to a wife? But it doesn't end there. Then comes the job of raising a child. So a husband contributes a little bit. He comes home, he pats the child on the head. He says, "Nice child, behave yourself, listen to mommy, good night," that's it. When it comes to the morning, the child's got to be cleansed and bathed and fed and pampered and diapered and all that goes with it, the endless items that go with a child from the beginning, very birth of the child when it's so tiny requires attention every second or every minute or even putting the child to sleep. The waking hours at night. Once in a while a husband gets up very sleepily and he gropes his way through the dark, will help a wife with a child at night. Once in a while. It doesn't happen too often. Especially after a wife goes through a whole day of struggling and suffering with a child who is either chas v'shalom colic or cries a lot and has to go through this tremendous task of taking care of an infant. And then as the child grows, there is that much more worry. As the child begins to walk, to run around, to run about, the child must be guarded at every single second, every single step. And the husband is away working very hard at a desk. He's working at his desk with a cold bottle of soda, and saying to himself, "Oh, my wife is enjoying the company of this kid. She must be having a real good time there." Meanwhile, the mother, the wife at home, having a good time wiping off the blood from the child as the kid fell and hurt itself, scratched itself, the worrying, the screams, the crying, the nervousness. Benadol says, could you belittle this thing? Recognize this. Recognize the truth, what women go through. And this is alone. You gave nothing towards the pain. You didn't participate in the pain of pregnancy, the pain of childbirth, the difficulty of raising a child throughout. All this, so many different forms. Therefore, at least give pity to your wife. At least have pity on this second half of the partnership. Have pity, respect, and show affection properly. And then know too, as the Gemara says, that you do this, you're selfish. You're doing it for yourself. As the Gemara says, the more respect you show your wife, the more wealth you'll be blessed with. Give respect to your wives, you become wealthy. Want to be a rich man? I'd like to be a rich man. If only you could be a rich man. Very easy. Very easy. You have a wife, show due respect to the wife, you become rich. And as the Gemara says too, if you have doubts, the Gemara says the Fetish, you have doubts as to why wives should be respected, to why wives who don't struggle with the learning of Teda, they don't sit over a blot Gemara and learn Gemara, why should they rate anything? The Gemara says, you know why? Because Dayenu, Dayenu means it's enough for us, over enough, that they raise our children. They help raise our children. They have merited, they deserve the greatest Gan Eden for that. What they go through here, they deserve the biggest Gan Eden, because just picture a man having to go through something like that. He'd give everything for it. He said, "I'll give my wife everything. Let her take over. Let her take this back." Therefore, a person should recognize, they should acknowledge this. Abinazal's warning was a person should give the proper due respect to his wife. This is tied in again with the first item. Through this, there will be harmony, there will be true affection and devotion in the home. This will lead to the presence of the Shekhinah, the Spirit of Hashem. Through the Shalom Bayis, this will lead to a Yichud Le'eloh, where the Shekhinah will return from Goas. There will be the Bias, Mashiach, and Canaan, when Hashem Echod, Ushmai Echod, uniting in heaven, being the base of Mikdash, and Simcha Kolis, for the